Hello, and welcome to another episode of Gumbo Live. Here's your host, BJ from Board Game Gumbo.
Hey, board gamers. BJ from Board Game Gumbo here, back on another episode of Gumbo Live. It's episode number 149, Gumbo Live, the number one Facebook Live talk show in Hanover, Maryland, about board gaming. Our special guest tonight, Ben Hammer, designer of We All Take from the River, a game that's coming out on Kickstarter March 23rd, I think. But we'll double check with Ben when we bring him up to this show. So check that out. Hey, hit us up on social media, on Board Game Gumbo, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Twitch, Instagram, or on Blue Sky. And we'll be looking for your questions in the chat crew. But enough blather. Let's get right to our special guest. It's Ben. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Ben, welcome in. You are from the Maryland area, isn't that right?
Yeah, Silver Spring.
And this is your first game that we're going to be talking about tonight, but you are probably familiar with the elevator pitch by now since you've had to pitch it around. So give us the elevator pitch. Who is Ben Hammer and how'd you get involved in gaming?
Is it the elevator pitch for me?
Yikes. It's the elevator pitch for you.
That's way harder.
Give us a short description. And I love my buddy Lance Meister. I said, give us the elevator pitch. Who is Lance Meister? And like 30 minutes later, he was like, and another thing, when I was in fifth grade. So
it's a long elevator.
Lance has had a long life as a gamer, so he's got a lot of stories to tell.
I mean, that's great. So I started game design during COVID, actually, sitting alone, isolating because I'd been exposed. And I was, you know, trapped in my room, and there'd been a while. So I worked in public policy for a little while for a website called GovTrack, which was doing research on Congress for like federal policy stuff. And we found this game that someone had made a board game about gerrymandering. And I don't actually remember the publishers or the name of the game, but we found it and it was kind of cool. And I remember, do you know it?
Oh, man. I do know of the game and I just can't remember the name of it.
It was a story for a little bit. It was like going around because gerrymandering was a hot topic.
Sure.
Elbridge
Gerry, if I remember right.
Elbridge Gerry? I wouldn't even know if you told me.
Gerrymandering is named after Elbridge Gerry, if I remember right. So anyway, Steve's giving me the thumbs up.
So we played that game and it was pretty cool and it kind of, you know, you got an idea of what gerrymandering meant and it had some of that like bringing policy into a gamified sort of way. And my boss, you know, says to me like, man, I wonder if we could make a game out of Congress. And I'd been already into role-playing games a lot. I've been playing D&D forever.
Did you go to a D&D camp?
What's that? Yes. Oh, yes. Every Thursday, I would go spend 3 hours sitting in the city municipal building. We played this mixture. It was like a blend of first and third edition, which the guy who runs it, he still is running it. His name's Dave, and he calls it Dave Edition. And like, I was there since I was nine. It was so fun. And you know,
the reason I bring it up is I went to summer camp and that was the first time I ever played D&D with my best friend, John Cargill. He brought all of his books.
Perfect.
He taught us. And that was kind of my origin story into really all the gaming I've done all my life, the hobby style gaming. All right. So Verla's got a line on it. Map maker gerrymandering, maybe.
Click on that link
and see what you think.
That sounds right. Let me go check it out. Yes, that's it.
There it is. Verla gets 1 point.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
She's leaving the show already.
Wow, Steve. Yeah. We could skip our game at the end. She's already done it.
Then that's why we call her the Overlord. She really runs this show. The show would fall apart without her. So.
That's awesome.
You enjoyed this game. Somebody said, hey, let's do a game about Congress. You didn't know that We the People is out there. I think that's the name of the game I'm thinking of, Steve.
I didn't know anything. Like, man, that has been so enlightening. I feel like such a dilettante coming into this world, Because I so that happened, and then just kind of planted the seeds in my mind of like, oh, I could make a board game like that. That's something that I can do. And I have a fine arts background, so I knew I could do kind of some of the illustration myself, and I started getting excited about that. Fast forward to during the pandemic when I'm trapped in my room, and I think, okay, if I wanted to make a board game about public policy, what would I make? And I decided I don't really want to make a game that is like directly simulating the US government. I want to make a game that encourages people to kind of design, to learn to interact with each other and sort of build their own little government within the game for themselves. And to me, the really important part of that was that it can't be fully cooperative, because then everyone's just working together and there's not really, then you can have stuff like quarterbacking, and you sort of have, you know, the government that forms isn't really as much of a government as just like a plan. Like, do we, but everyone wants the same thing. And it can't be fully competitive, because then at the end of the day, you're all trying to stab each other in the back. And I've played enough games of Risk as a kid to know, like, you know, even if you form an alliance, at the end of the day, you're going to all kill each other.
Somebody's going to get left out, right?
Yeah. And so I, completely ignorant of like how much depth there was to the board game world, sat down with a pen and paper and just started writing out this concept for, all right, you know, if I'm gonna make a game about policymaking, where's it gonna be? And I decided on the river, because that has this perfect element of like, your actions upriver are gonna affect the people downriver, and you don't have to care, but maybe you should, because maybe they're gonna, maybe they can help you sometime along the way.
Eyes kind of opening up to this. You said you were kind of ignorant about how big this board gaming world was.
Yes.
Do you remember that moment though, when you, for me, it was finding the Dice Tower and BGG. And I remember the first time I created an account on BGG. I don't even have that one, because I can't remember the password, and I don't have that email address anymore. But the first time I did, I actually went on there and I was intimidated, because I was like, oh my God, look, there's so many games. I was thinking it was just the stuff that was at, you know, Target or Barnes and Noble. What was that moment for you when you noticed, oh my God, there's this whole world that I didn't even know about? It's like opening up a world of fairies and you didn't know that the fairies existed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So there's sort of two parts to it. The first was meeting someone who was a genuine like board gamer, and going into one of those basements, like that's, and being like, holy, like, you know, seeing a bunch of games that were still wrapped in the plastic, because, and being like, oh, are you going to play these? And he's like, probably not. No. And he was like, you know, I play some of them, but like, I have to have them all. That's the, and just, you know, then having it right there was like, oh, whoa, there's a lot here. And then the second part was actually like way later, kind of too late, if you ask me, which was after I'd made my game. Like I designed it, I'd been like, wow, this is amazing. No one's ever thought of anything like this before. It's crazy that no one's done anything like this. And I start looking into like marketing stuff, and well, I wasn't finished with the game, but I was sort of far enough that I was like, okay, I can really think about selling this. And then it was like, okay, I found the like Jamie Stonemeyer Kickstarter guide thing, and I started looking into that. And then that led me to, okay, wait, maybe I should check out some Kickstarters that are already being running. And wow, there's a lot of board games on Kickstarter. And like, just slowly, piece by piece, like it was like, you know, pulling on a string, and it just kept being more and more. And like, eventually I was like, oh, like, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Like this is, you know, there's so much here.
So time to go back and kind of experience some of those games, you thought?
I mean, I've gotten to for some, like I've got a pretty good group around here. And so, you know, we're starting to like expand our horizons a little bit more and try to bring in a little heavier games and a little like more interesting stuff. But like, my want to play list is way bigger than my have played list right now.
It's never going to shrink, man. It's only going to get worse. In fact, I want to bring in Steve, because I've got a question for Steve if he's ready. Steve, you heard Ben talk about the guy in the basement with all the shrink-wrapped games. Steve is a philosopher. He's the name father. And Steve, you've got thoughts about games that are just sitting there in shrink wrap, right?
You know, I do, honestly. I mean, this was just something that came up in discussion on a friend of ours'
website.
So you're talking about with Dean and the folks at Meepletown over there.
Right, right.
I think there are collectors, like you were saying, that friend of yours is like, oh, yeah, I'm probably not going to play that, but it needs to live here. It's mine. Those collectors, I really work hard not to be one of those. If it's going to be a collection, I need to curate it, because if there's going to be some that just stay there in the basement, I mean, that's cruel. That's keeping your that's keeping your babies buried in the basement. They should go out into the world and find another place to play if they're not going to be on my table.
And then so, Steve is brutal. I mean, he loves his babies, but sometimes it's time for them to come out of the nest, right, Steve?
Yeah, they got to fly.
And make other people happy.
They got to find their way in their world.
It's like the gamer version of kill your darlings.
I guess so. But, you know, at the same time, you're sending them off to do bigger and better things than wait for you.
That's true. They're finding a family.
Exactly. They bring in Verla here. We got the Gumbo Lord. We haven't seen her in weeks. Welcome in.
Hey, Verla.
Hi, friends.
Verla, shrink wrap? Good? Bad?
I'm not a fan. Not a fan. Well, I don't know. If your heart and your intention truly is someday it's going to get out of shrink wrap and it's not just to be collected, mm-hmm. I can live with that. Personally, I tend to take things out of shrink wrap really quickly, even if they're not going to get played right away. So I can check mm-hmm. for, you know, contents, making sure everything's there in case I need mm-hmm. to reach out to a publisher to say, hey, you sent the wrong punch board or something like that. But I try not to be just a collector either. I want my games to get played.
Yeah, that would be the worst thing. You have this game that you just don't have time for 2 or 3 years, Ben. You open up the game finally, and the shrink wrap comes off, and you're super excited, and there's missing 5 pieces. And the company stopped servicing the game 4 or 5 years ago, and now you've got to try to find it.
Yeah. Well, to me, I'm a really tactile person. Like, I was so excited. I was buying prototypes for We All Take from the River, like, too early. Like, before, really, you should be doing that. But because I wanted to, like, I was just so excited to feel the pieces in my hands and be able to, like, look at, you know, oh, these ones are wood, these ones are little chipboard or whatever. So if I had a shrink, you know, if I buy a game, the first thing I'm going to do is tear it open, and I want to, like, pick up all the pieces and take a look at them and how much do they weigh, you know?
Wayne's mm-hmm. from the Wayne's from the Beans and Dice podcast checking in, Wayne. And Wayne is right there with you, Ben. He says all games are open to organized and ready for play, even if it's going to be on my shelf for a while. I probably only have 2 or 3 that are still in shrink wrap, but the rest of the time it's like, nope, I want to start organizing. I want to look at the rule book. I want to check out the pieces. Oh, but it is tough to get rid of games at some point. It is tough to get rid of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets easier the more you do it, though. That's what I'm discovering. Mm-hmm.
So we were talking in the green room before. Steve, Ben's from the DC, what I like to call the DMV area.
DMV is
DMV means something very different in the New York area. It means taking your entire day to get your license renewed.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So, we're not talking about that.
But yeah, I totally get it.
Ray Frederick says, down there, though. Yeah, Ray Frederick says this topic is terrible. Can I tell you why Ray Frederick is downing that topic?
Oh, I think.
We call him Mr. Shrink Wrap. Ray's been buying games. And here's what Ray says. And Ray always says, well, you know, my sons are going to want to play this game someday. So I had to have it now because it might not be available someday. And he is right that some games take a long time to come back. But, Ray, they do. What is the vassal rule? If they're good enough, they're going to get printed again, right?
Yeah, I worry about that too, though, and tend to scoop stuff up thinking, oh, my niece and my nephew will love this. I just need them to be a little bit older, a few more years.
Raise your hand if you love opening the box or going into a library and opening a book and that smell, that paper, cardboard smell, right? Mm-hmm. I love that smell. Some people don't, though. Yeah, Verla's not. No, that's not your thing?
The smell itself is not it. It just gets associated with the excitement. It smells like, oh, new game. The smell itself is not the thing.
I love that smell.
It's Pavlovian.
It is Pavlovian.
It's like,
all right, so tell Ben about what's going on in the DMV area and anybody else in the chat crew that's in that area. There's something big going on.
Yeah, there's something in the water down there. I guess since we're talking about the river here, there's something going on down there that seems to be folks have design in their blood. there's something that's going on down there. We've had Connie Vogelman, Tori Brown, Elizabeth Hargrave. There's something about the folks
Kevin
around
Bertram.
The deep. Kevin Bertram from Fort Circle Games. What do you think it is that makes that particular area be kind of like a gaming mecca for those ideas of design
Jason
and
Matthews,
play?
Who we haven't had on the show yet.
Absolutely.
One. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
What is it about it? What is about the DMV, Ben?
I wish I knew. I kind of hope that there's like a secret club out there that I'm eventually going to like earn my way into, maybe. I've never met any of them.
A secret club, he says, Steve.
Like,
tell him what he's won.
Oh, it's
really? No, we got a club for you to join, Ben. Steve?
It's not a cult, we promise.
We're talking about CircleCon. CircleCon.
Yeah, probably Circle. Yeah.
Sports That's... Games runs a convention. I think this is going to be their second or third year that they run this.
This, I think, is the third. Yes.
Yeah, third year. And it's they've all been the reason I'm not trying to joke about it. The reason I'm telling you is I just got an email. I think Steve got the same one today. And the owner of the con, Kevin Bertram, who owns Fort Circle Games, he says there's only a few tickets left. So if you're even interested in a con that's about playing games, but also it's going to have a bunch of designers who want to break your game, who want to give you some advice, who want to encourage you, can give you some feedback, this is the one to go to right there in the DMC area. So DMC,
historical focus. And there is a Discord that you might be able to join too, to start to perhaps, grease those wheels a little bit.
Wow. I'm not putting up this comment
because it's a lie. It's a dang lie, Dave. And you know that. Go ahead, Ben. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I was saying, I thought you were joking about the invitation to the secret club. And like, I didn't know. I found out just now that CircleCon exists. Like,
there it is.
That is, it's just, again, just pulling on string, and it keeps more and more stuff keeps showing up. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's so great.
If you do go this year, you tell Kevin that we sent you. You tell him that.
I will do that.
No, we're big fans of Fort Circle Games. You may not have heard because they're kind of a, I call it a boutique publisher, because they're one of these publishers that has smaller print runs, and they do a genre of game that maybe doesn't appeal to every single person. There's people that really like historical games. They did one about Jefferson's battle with the Barbary Pirates called Shores of Tripoli. They did a fantastic game, my two-player game of the year, which was Votes for Women, all about the suffrage movement. Yeah.
I saw that one. Okay. I want to play. That's on my wanna playlist.
Yeah, so that's that. She'll probably be there. Tori Brown will probably be. Oh yeah, Tori will definitely be there.
Tori's going to be there. Yeah,
yeah. So that's all good stuff.
Cool.
Well, we were speaking of designers. I always like to ask designers, because I feel like I'm terrible at playtesting, so I'm always trying to get tips, and this is my chance to get that. Ben, what are you looking at? You've mentioned in some of your information about the game that you've gotten some feedback in designing, but when you're playtesting your game, if I'm sitting there and you don't know me, and you've asked me to playtest the game, what are you looking for? What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I actually have a lot of thoughts about this, because like I said, I have a fine arts background, and so I've been through many critiques. And so I have strong opinions about how to have a proper critique. What you as the critic should be doing. And it depends, because it depends on kind of what your relationship with the person is and what's your role in that situation. But when we're talking about playtesting, to me, I think the most helpful thing, most important thing, is to just give me your experience. Like, I want to know, I want data points. I want you to tell me, like, when I played this game, this is how I felt. This is when I had fun. This is when I didn't. And like, I think, to me, the best playtester talks a lot about just what happened while they were playing. That's as opposed to kind of offering suggestions for actual like changes to the game, like rules fixes or things like that. In part because like they don't know what kind of, they don't know what my darlings are. They don't know what kind of stuff is like the point of the game. So like I've had people like at the start when I was, doing the elevator pitch, I was saying the point of the game is to have these asymmetrical objectives. And I've had people say like, oh, you could try getting rid of those. And it's like, well, then I'm making a different game. And, you know, it's not, it's a valid criticism. Like, it's totally fine. But I take that to mean, like, I don't really enjoy that, you know, that player did not enjoy the asymmetrical objectives. And then I get to make the value decision of, like, okay, you know, in that case, I'm going to say, yeah, I don't care, because that's why I want to make the game in the first place. Whereas if they say, and I got this critique a lot, like, it's too fiddly. And that there was a lot that went into the game to try to, like, make it less fiddly. That really matters to me, because they're saying, like, yeah, I'm trying to have fun here, but, like, there's just too much little things going on. And it's, and that, when I hear that, I can say, like, okay, I don't want people thinking this, there's too much little things going on while they play my game. So it's really just
for,
like,
the experience,
your
experience they're having. Some strong opinions. And chat crew, we need to have one more strong opinion from Ben. I've got a little quick game for you called Rank 'Em. The way this works is I'm going to give you three things. They're based, that they're three things that you should be familiar with. Hopefully you are. And chat crew, Verla, Steve, me, we're all going to rank them. 1, 2, 3. Here's the deal, though. I'm not going to tell you how to rank them. You can rank them however you want. This is, you're just going to, you got to explain yourself, of course. But I'm going to give you three things, and I want you to rank them. 1, 2, 3. But then we got to tell us why you ranked them 1, 2, 3. I'm not saying best to worst. It's your call, and I want the chat crew to play wrong. Three things. Ready?
Okay, ready.
All right, Ben, here's your three things. Old Bay, Angel Reese, and Terrapins. Rank them.
The three things are Old Bay, Angel Reese, and Terrapins.
Terrapins, yeah.
All right, that's easy. It's Terrapins at the top, okay. Old Bay is second, and then Angel Reese is a distant third.
Distant third.
Sorry.
Terrapins over Old Bay. Steve, thoughts? How do you rank them?
Rank them. I'll rank the two that I know, and then the third one's going to be last. Okay. But unfortunately, I agree with Ben, because I'm already getting the sense that this is a Maryland-based thing, because Old Bay pops. Maryland, the Terps, I get that that's, you're talking about the Maryland team. So I would probably say, not being a huge college sports fan, I would put the Terps 2 behind Old Bay. Okay. I can when you're talking about eating, I could usually find some reason to get in favor of that thing. So Old Bay 1. Terps 2, the third thing that I don't even remember not knowing.
Angel Reese. Yeah. So Ben, why do you have Terps below? Old Bay below Terps.
So Terps reminds me of, I just did it on, like, instinct. What does it make me think of? If you go to UMD campus, there's this bronze or brat, like, big terrapin statue, and you'll notice its nose is really shiny, and the reason for that is because University of Maryland students will rub the nose before their exams. That is, and my dad reasonable. Used to work there, and yeah. And that's what I think of when I think, and I just, you know, I like animals, so yeah. You know, I've got,
now that's,
I've got
what a little, I thought you would have said. Right, I would have thought you would have said, you know, terrapins, I'm an animal guy. So I had to put that. Verla, where do you rank them? Old Bay, Angel Reese, Terrapins. Did you know Terrapins? Did you know that was the University of Maryland mascot?
I don't know what any of the things you said are.
Oh no!
It's their version of ducks.
Oh, okay.
And we know how much you love ducks, Verla.
It's a turtle. Who doesn't like turtles?
All right,
I love turtles.
Yeah,
Angel Reese.
They're better than ducks.
Tell me how you'd rank them.
The angel one first, just to be contrary, then the turtle, then the other one.
No one from the chat crew is playing along. I'm going to go Angel Reese, of course, because she's the star center / forward for LSU. Their top women's college basketball team going into the playoffs.
I should have known that there was some.
But Angel is originally from Bmore. She's a Baltimore native. So that's where she came. I'm going to go Terrapins next because, like Verla said, Ben said, who doesn't love turtles? I love turtles, right? We've got lots of turtles here. I'm going to say third because I know Angel Reese and I know turtles, but I've never actually tasted Old Bay. So I went third with Old Bay. Yeah. Mm. Does Old Bay have cayenne? Because if not.
Yeah. I honestly don't. nothing I've know tastes the same, and it's great. Yeah. I love Old Bay, just to be clear. It tastes like the Chesapeake.
Yep.
Oh, Michelle Steele says Old Bay first. Old Bay first. Okay. By the way, that was a shout out because my sister used to live in Hanover, Maryland. So that's why I said we're the number one Facebook Live board game show in Hanover, Maryland. So shout out to my sister, Shelly. What's up, Shelly? All right. So let's get to some spicy hot games we played. PJ from Board Game Gumball, I've got my guest here, Ben Hammer, who's got a new game coming out March 23rd. We all take from the river. But Steve, you played a pretty spicy game that I have no idea about. Now, normally, I kind of know a little bit about the game. I already know whether I want to play it or not. Tell us about
Scowentier.
Scowentier. But here's your duty, Steve. You've got to convince me and Berla and Ben.
Okay.
Why should we play this game?
Okay. I have only played this game solo, and it's a nice solitaire puzzly game. So if you like puzzles and you like playing with cards, then you're going to have to figure out how to do this. This is you. You are the badger, the spirit of the woods, running around trying to get away from the devil, Gamle Erik, who is chasing you around. And you're running through the forest of these trees. Now, if I want to convince you about why to think about this game, the very first thing to think about is the art in this game. If you like playing with cards and playing solitaire, great. But while the theme is
art?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, man.
But in a very different style. Okay. Very different style. You're going to see this is coming across as very Scandinavian style. These are your five different kinds of allies. You can probably pop some of these up better than I could. You keep popping through. There you go. There's some of your allies you can see there placed in the woods. And essentially, this is going to be the board. The trees are the board that become a rondelle, one of my favorite mechanisms in a game. You're traveling through the forest.
Like this, you're always, trees around here?
Exactly. But think of it as like there's one missing. There's a hexagon, and you'll see that some of the trees are fine, but some of the trees are blighted, right? The devil is chasing you around those trees, and you always have to stay a step ahead. And then across the top, you have the devil's minions that you have to be fighting off with the cards that you collect from your allies. Trolls.
Like Formskifter?
Formskifter, like a shapeshifter, yes.
Oh, Formskifter. Got it. Okay.
Formskifter, the other folk.
We're going to edit this in post, Ben, so no one will hear that message.
The Nissa, which are like the gnomes.
A little
trolls who are on your side. And I'm missing one in the middle. Well, one more.
I can't see the name.
You'll see that they all have different powers. You have to spend to bring them into your hand. But then when you use them later on, you have a challenge. You can use them for powers that will help you escape being chased, or you can save them because you have to redeem them to fight off the other side. So you're basically redeeming these cards to get rid of the Lindworm and the Mar.
I'm fascinated by this. Art, Steve, because I see that it's Dutre. Like I can recognize the influence, but it's different from what he normally does.
It is wildly different. It is trying to be very much in a Scandinavian fairy folkland style. That's the gist of the game. You are constantly chasing. You have four different actions that you can take to stay ahead of being chased. If you ever get caught, game's over. And as you're being chased around the rondelle, if you have bad things happen in the game, those wonderful trees go from their right side to their blight side. That shortens the rondelle so that the chasing you is easier for the devil to catch you. You can redeem powers to maybe bring the trees back and make it so that you can chase faster, but then you're using your cards that you need to fight off the minions later. If you cannot tell, I like the game and have never won the game. it is tempting to have to go back to it all the time. It is just gorgeous. The theme is largely painted on, but it's painted beautifully.
Yeah.
So I have no trouble with that.
Berla,
but it is a solitaire puzzle game.
Look at this badger. Look at this. How cute this is, man.
Just based on the badger. Right? That's all he had to say. He showed that little piece, and I was like, sold.
Oh, I was sold when the devil came out. That was the one that got me.
I'm digging the art. very hard. The mechanics
that was the
quite,
thing.
Not quite sold on, but I'm not, you know, I'm not a solo player, but you don't have to play it solo, right? You can play with
them. No, you don't. It can be a co-op game that I think goes up to four players, but you'll see on the card, on one side, there's the cost to take the card into your hand. And then on the other one is a power that you could possibly use.
Oh, I love games like that. Yeah.
But you have to collect enough of them. You have to take, for example, four trolls to be able to fight off the level four Lindworm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to get rid of all. So every time you use a power to stay alive, you're losing your chances to be able to fight off the.
You know what this reminds me a little bit of? Not exactly in terms of mechanics, but you know how Button Shy games, they have these cards that you need to use for a power, but you're also going to need to put them in your tableau. Mm-hmm. Or are you going to need them to attack a monster? You know, like you have these tough choices where, like, I got to get rid of. What's that game that you and I used to play? The one from Ignacy about being on the deserted island.
Friday.
Something. I mean, I know it's not
similar
the same
to it, especially playing solo. Yeah, you're managing your deck because again, you can see up in the corner there is a market that you're buying from essentially.
Oh yeah. Oh,
and those four cards that are underneath it are the actions you take on each turn. Those are the powers that you've got. You're collecting to be able to do all of those important things, and something's going to go wrong. Not really pandemic, but pandemic style. You lose the game by not managing your cards correctly. The art is just wonderful.
I love it. All right, let's go around the horn. Let's start with Verla, the Gumbo Overlord. Has he sold you?
I'm definitely willing to give it a try.
So it's a try, yeah?
I would try. I don't know that I would be sold on it, but it's got that Badger, Rondell. That's, you know, the wonderful word, Rondell.
Yep.
That lures me in. So
Ben, what you think?
I actually have a particular friend in mind who I want to buy this for because I think he would really love it. So I'm going to call it sold.
Oh, wow. Cool. Okay. Sold. Yeah, all right. I'm interested. It's a play for me. I'd like to play this one. Number one, I love the art. But you sold me on the card play, which I guess I was so fascinated by the art, I wasn't really paying that close attention. But when you started describing for me, I'm like, I love those games where I've got that critical decision of this card that I've got to either use it for one thing or use it for another. Yep. And this whole thing. Oh, hey, we got Evan checking in. Hey, Evan.
Hi, Evan. Thanks
for stopping by. Got to put the girls to bed. Good night. Good night. All right.
I'll bring this to the con so Evan, Verla, and I at least can sit down and play this over the summertime. Give it a shot.
Nice.
Stick that lip out further, BJ.
That makes me sad. All right. So that is it's a try for me, and I think for Verla, a buy for Ben. And Steve, you're keeping in your car.
I already bought it, so it lives here. And if you look over. If you look over in the corner with Kathy's
gnome collection.
This fits right in there.
This is also a Steve game because the size of the box, which you and I have been talking for 6 years that we love those style. Yeah, so like all the new De Vere games are all about this big. I love it.
Is that Red Cathedral size?
Yeah,
it's smaller than Red Cathedral. It's smaller than Red Cathedral. I would say it's even smaller. It's smaller than Targi. Targi is more square. This is about the same height, but thinner
rectangular.
Less wide than Targi.
Just based on what it looks like Sub Point City or Sub Asher or one of those little games a little bigger than your hand. You know what I mean?
Ballpark. Ballpark there. Yep.
Nice.
Gnome Misfits. All right. I like it. That is
Scowentier.
Scowentier. Ah, man. I've practiced so many times, I still can't get it.
Yep.
PJ from Morgan Gumbo, I've got my guests here, Ben Hammer, who is the designer of We All Take from the River. That's coming out on Kickstarter March 23rd. And Ben, we want to hear about this game. So Steve found out about it. We've been seeing some of the ads on Facebook, so we wanted to get you on the show before it goes live because the theme is very interesting to us. And take it away. I want to hear, you know, how did this game come to be?
Cool. Yeah. So I like that you bring up theme because that to me is like my big point of pride about the game is everything is really thematic. The game came to be because I wanted to make a game about policy making. And while I was kind of on that path, my first thought was like, you know, I care a lot about the environment. I've been seeing all these nature games kind of out in the works. And I think that environmental policy is like a perfect setting to have kind of a simulation style board game. where you can have those really like challenging decisions of living together in a small shared environment and having to work with one another and manage your disagreements and not necessarily being against each other, not necessarily being with each other, and not necessarily knowing what each other's goals are. So it's this combination hidden role game with some like worker placement mechanics going on and some resource management going on that ultimately is all about diplomacy and figuring out, well, what does everyone want and can it all happen and how do we make it happen? And then there's this added element to the game, which is that because you are in a shared environment, you do have the possibility of the tragedy of the commons looming above you, this situation where you can't figure it out and you destroy each other because of it. And in this case, that's the river. And if you pollute the river too much, there's a particular rule. If enough pollution reaches the estuary of the river and clogs up the river and destroys the entire ecosystem, then you've all lost. And so you want to play around making sure that doesn't happen, but still having to navigate your disagreements as players.
So it's competitive, but there's a certain marker where it's not, you know, if the pollution gets too high, everybody loses basically, but there can still be a winner if everybody makes it, or is it just totally cooperative?
It's actually, everyone's win condition is separate. So any combination number of players can win. You can have everyone win at the end of the game if they've all achieved their goals, or you can have no one win by the end of the game if none of them have. And there are certain situations, there are certain goals that kind of bump up against each other. Oh dear, I don't actually have much on the Board Game Geek website yet. I should have updated that sooner.
I've got those other pictures I'm going to bring up in just a second.
Oh, perfect. But this
I wanted to kind of show the layout of how the game is set up. Is this right?
Yeah, that's right. That's an older picture, but kind of an older prototype model. And the second picture you showed of all the cards, that gives you a sense of what those different objectives are. So there's five objectives that exist, and each player has a combination of two of them. So the math there is that there's 10 possible roles that you can have as a player. And you don't know whether your objectives overlap with someone else. Likely they do, but you don't know how they overlap. And so some of those objectives are inherently cooperative. For example, you might have the conservation objective, and that means you want to keep the river clean. And you want as many other conservationists on the map as you possibly can, because they're going to help you clean up pollution, and their in goal directly aligns with yours. The same is true for the city building objective. Some players want to build a city along the river, and you can actually see that represented by that little there's the city token kind of to the left there. That's the unbuilt city, you can see. And that's like a group effort. In order to build the city, you need to work with the other players and you need to pass a policy to agree upon where is the city going to be built. And then you have to provide the resources to build it. And that's another objective where you want other people who want to build the city. On the other hand, there's another objective, the agriculture objective. And that's wanting to gather fish from the river. But the river has a limited supply of fish. And so for every other player who also wants to gather fish from the river, you're going to be butting heads with them over, are there enough resources for the two of us to achieve our goal? It's possible you can both collect the 15 fish you need by the end of the game, but you won't necessarily. And so you might end up in conflict. And then the last two objectives are the ones that kind of tie people together and make it so that your roles next to each other intrinsically depend on each other. And those are the capital objective, which is to be the richest player on the map. And it's the only one with richest. It's a zero sum objective. If there's any other capitalist on the map, the two of you cannot both win. You are enemies because only one of you can be the richest.
Okay.
And so you have this, but you don't know, you know, you're sitting there being like, okay, I want to be the richest player on the map, but I don't know if anyone else does. So you might be able to get away with it. If no one else cares, you could get away with it with one gold token. You can grab that and be done with it. But that uncertainty is going to lead you to kind of maybe be more willing to screw people over, or maybe be more wanting to like hold people to some strict bargains. And that's going to create tension along the game. And then the last objective is the charity objective. And that's to make sure that that's someone who wants to make sure that everyone else achieves at least one of their objectives. That's your kind, altruistic player, who's also dependent on figuring out, well, what is everyone else trying to do? And can I make it happen? And so the players are going to have a combination of those, and that puts them in this kind of complicated situation where they're trying to fulfill both objectives. You need to do both of your tasks in order to win. And you're trying to suss out, well, what's everyone else want?
So we don't know the other objectives then, right? We don't know what everybody else has.
You don't know what everyone else has. You have a hidden roll card. It's face down, and you only reveal it at the end of the game. So we've had, there's lots of fun stuff that can happen there. There's people, I've had players who pretend like they're farmers and they gather tons and tons of fish, and they get the charitable people to give them fish to make sure they'll get all of their fish. And then at the end of the game, they sell every single one of them for money. And because they were actually a capitalist and they just, they didn't care about fish. We've had people hold the river hostage. Both as actually the last game I played was really fun. Someone was an environmentalist, they're a conservationist, and they decided the only way that I can know for a fact that no one else is going to pollute the river is if I hold it hostage and say, if any of you leave pollution, then I'm going to completely destroy the river. So they decided to play an eco-terrorist. That was what their, that was like their strategy. Which I had never thought of. It did not occur to me that that was you know, available to them as an option. And it turned out to be very effective because by the end of the game, they just piled up. They had this huge industry that they built at the bottom of the river, and they were just ready to dump all of their pollution into the estuary unless everyone kept the river clean. And we did.
So I'm Steve, I don't know if you're getting it. I'm getting some vibes of a cool twist on that Martin Wallace game that you and I both played, although you played one version, I played the other one. Discworld.
Discworld and Nanty Narking.
And Nanty Narking, yeah, where you don't know what the other player's role is, but you're trying to suss it out.
You're trying to suss it out.
As you go through. This is almost like a longer version of Among Us, but we're all dealing with the river, right? Yeah. Now we're trying to figure out who's really trying to save the space station? Who's really trying to save the river? And we won't find out till the end. But like you said, Ben, people can sort of role play their roles into something unexpected. That's kind of a cool twist. I don't think I've seen that before.
And a thing that I'm really excited about it is that, one thing is all of the mechanics in the game are based on actual ecological events that occur along a river.
Lots of research went behind this.
A lot. Although the based on is holding a lot of weight there. Because you know there's a limit to how accurately meeples on a map can really portray.
This is not a simulation, right?
If it is a simulation, it is really inaccurate. Right. But it has like your risk of deforesting is that you can increase the likelihood of floods. And that's true. That's real. If in real life, deforesting increases flood risk. The wetlands absorb water so that, kind of like a sponge, and that reduces flooding, but it also makes them vulnerable in their own ways. And the way that resources replenish is all based on how they actually replenish. Trees regrow on their own, fish spawn, but only if there are already fish in the river, because if you overfish, there's nothing to spawn anymore. As the gravel spawns, because when those wetlands soak up that water, it carries sediment from the mountains upstream, and that sediment gets caught down there. And that's why a lot of like gravel industry ends up digging up wetlands, because they're trying to get access to the gravel that has been washed down river and ended up in those deposits.
Steve, I can't wait till somebody is going to defend their dissertation by saying, but I played We All Take from the River 7 times. That's where this is actual science.
No, it's.
Would you accept that as one of your papers, Steve? You know, I played this game 7 times.
I absolutely would accept it as one of my papers if they also then talked about the data behind it. But the sure, yeah.
Interesting. Now, Verla, I don't know if you know this. I've been kind of showing off the box cover and some of the other art. Ben, you're the artist behind this game. Is that right?
I made...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, that was actually sort of one of the motivations for making a game also was like, it was an art project. And seeing the kind of art that people have done making board games, I was like, wow, I want to try that. But you know, short of actually making the pieces, I got it manufactured.
Yeah,
sure. But I drew everything, designed everything. This has been a solo effort from day one.
Cards that we're looking at, this is all you've done all the artwork for this.
Yes. Yeah. That's inked by hand and then colored digitally.
Yep.
Wow.
That was the thing that popped for me with the artwork. I do like the map and I like the representation of the changing areas along the river representing as you're moving down toward wetland and marsh and what have you. But the art on those for the cards was really very striking. I thought that was quite brilliant. And it was very impressive and surprising to me to see your name listed twice on there. You're on the way to being a Ryan Lockett the second, yep, perhaps here with this
double triple team. So Verlo, that's one of the things that caught my eye too. Also, is that when you're looking at the art, it doesn't look like Vincent Dutrain has that style, right? But this art doesn't look like any particular person because it's Ben's.
Yeah.
Right.
Agreed.
Cool. Style. What about the cover? Is that you too, Ben?
Yep, that's me too. And actually also the font of the lettering that was a point you talk about
the typeface
the typeface in the instruction manual was not me. That is a combination of Cambria and a free font called Typemic Typeface, which I had to use because of the name.
As long as you didn't use Papyrus, we're okay with Chris Kirkman. So as long as you didn't use Papyrus. So how long does the game take during your playtesting? How long has it been taking?
It can go for, so it has a diplomatic aspect to it. And so that kind of depends on the player. I would say a short game lasts for 90 minutes and a long game lasts for 4 hours.
Okay.
It's definitely one of those games that can take a while depending on how willing people are to stop negotiations and get a move on. I actually ended up designing a quick version of the game. It takes out some of the complexity and some of the, you remove the water level stuff. So throughout the game, you're tracking how high the river is and how that affects the land and the resources. And you can play without it, which, you know, I prefer to have it, but it sort of makes for a nice tutorial or quick play version where you can say, you know, the resources are always going to repopulate. We're never going to worry about flooding. That's just not going to happen, but we're just going to make this a game about like moving our meeples along the map and deciding on our actions. And I think that actually added a nice element to the game because then you can play, you know, an hour long game. And it still takes some time because you're still you're walking down. Turns start at the top of the river and you take your turn as a player based on where your structures are. So in theory, you can have 10 turns throughout a single day along the river, and a day being working your way from the top of the river to the bottom. Because if you've got like your excavators at the bottom of the river and your boats in the river and your camp is at the top of the river, each of those structures you built gets its own set of actions. And what that means is that the structures at the actions taken at the top of the river are going to have an impact on the people at the bottom of the river. Because if you make pollution, that pollution is going to start to flow downstream. And so you throughout the game, you have to be thinking about, you know, where do I want to be as well as what do I want to do?
Is there a sweet spot in the game for the player count?
I would say four players and five players is really where the game shines. I think it has, so you can play it one or two players and then it kind of becomes a different thing because at two players, it's almost fully cooperative. You can't have the same role card dynamic going on with only two people, because it just kind of, it doesn't work. You don't have, there's less diplomacy going on. So instead you work together and your goal is to build the city, gather the fish, and leave the river spotless at the end of it all. Which makes for a nice puzzle. And I've play tested that a bunch and it is fun. But to me, the really cool part of the game and the thing that gets me the most excited about it is that hidden role aspect, where you have the opportunity to kind of be in discussion with each other and saying things like, wait, don't pollute. I'll give you a tree if you need a tree. But like, you know, if you pollute now, that's going to wash into my land and I really don't want that. And those kinds of discussions. And I think at three players that starts to happen, but when you get to four and five players, then you really have some complexity of like, who wants what? How are we going to get it? And I think that's when the game is at its strongest.
If there's only one person pushing and one person pulling, you don't get the system emerging.
Right.
Clever.
So tell us about the Kickstarter project. March 23rd, is that right?
So the launch date is March 23rd. Somebody told me it is tradition. This is again the like me just not knowing anything about the board game world. Apparently, you launch on a Tuesday.
Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm committing sacrilege by having a Saturday launch. And you know, he was very nice about it. He was like, I mean, I don't really know why you launch on a Tuesday, but that just seems to be what people do. So I was actually gonna ask you guys
on Tuesdays.
That
I've actually seen reasons why, and I'm drawing a blank right now. Anybody know?
No idea.
Earl, you were in fulfillment. Do you remember? Did anybody ever talk about that?
Nobody ever talked about the launch dates though. That was kind of
there was a reason. I think like Monday, you know, things kind of, you know, the weekend and Mondays, things kind of, everybody gets kind of busy, and but they can get some hype and get excited about something coming up on Tuesday. You never want it on a Friday because Friday is a slow news day, right? You know,
right. Mm-hmm. People get back to the office and they're on Monday and they're avoiding their work and they're looking at what's going on. Oh, and there's a reminder that happens tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a little bit of that somewhere in there too.
The big thing on Kickstarter is that, and maybe this is not for everybody, but some people really get excited about the being one of the first people, because some of the Kickstarter projects have like first 100 backers will get a signed copy of Berla's book, How to Be the Gumball Overlord, you know, things like that. So you want to jump right into it. But other than that, I'm not sure why Tuesday would be it. So you're going Saturday, the 23rd. Well, oh, wait. Saturday
the 23rd is
how long is it going to last?
The official day, and it's going to be 30 days. And you know, we'll see. This has also been a big learning experience for me. I don't know if I show it, but I'm stressed out of my mind.
You don't look it at all. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Okay, I'm glad. I don't want to project. I don't want to give you that energy.
You're totally sunshine, Kari, right now. There's no torrents.
Sunshine. Yeah, I try to be the sunshine card in most of my days.
Yeah. Well, you read Jamie Stegmaier from Stonemaier Games' blog. You've done some research. You've played some games. Mm-hmm. You've got some beautiful art. So there's some things to sell about this game. I'm intrigued. I'm going to keep an eye on the Kickstarter project. And Steve actually had a link to it earlier.
Yeah, I'll pop it back in again.
I think I just saw it. Yeah, there we go. Link to the We All Take from the River. It's straight from there. WeAllTakeFromTheRiver.com, and that'll give you a link to click on the Kickstarter, and they can get notified about the Kickstarter if they go click on it, right?
Yep. They can. I'm doing the launch broom strategy, which I found out has actually been the subject of some controversy lately.
Launch room?
Launch boom is a Kickstarter group. And I basically like attended a seminar, found out this was another waking moment of like, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing. When like, you know, it was like, oh, you have to run advertisements to get people to know about things. Like, I just assumed that if I build it, they would come.
Right.
So
it works
so
in Iowa. It doesn't work in Kickstarter, unfortunately.
And so I ended up setting up a mailing list. And you can sign up for email updates, and then you can, if you really like the idea, you can put down a dollar, and the dollar is going to get you a special set of excavator of camp tokens. Oh, so you can see on the board there the camps are little houses, and it'll get you 25% off the game too if the camp tokens aren't
I've nice seen enough. Some people complain about that. I don't. I mean, you know, it's a dollar, and it's a way to get people excited, and if there's something
that seems pretty harmless to me.
Yeah, that's bothered me at all. Yep. That is We All Take from the River out on Kickstarter March 23rd. Hey, from everybody here at the Gumbo, we wish you well on that, Ben.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's some beautiful art. But this is a board game show, Ben, and you know what that means.
We got to talk about board games.
We got to play a board game. That's right. Yeah. Steve, take it away. What game are we going to be playing with Ben tonight?
We're going to go back to a tried and true favorite. We're going to do the RV game. So Ben has already gotten an update on this. He's gotten the brief. I have to speak in DC speak. You've gotten the brief.
he's got the white paper on it. He's
already exactly.
You have no idea how often people say that to me. It's just
triggering
him right now. So.
Ben has a game in mind that we're going to all have to try and guess. I haven't seen a ton of action in the chat, so it might be the three of us trying to figure out and asking questions. They're all sitting there quietly, but maybe they'll chime in. Ben's going to have the game in mind. We're going to have to ask questions to try to figure out what it is. It's a race between me, BJ, Verla, and everybody in chat to try and figure things out. So that's the gist. You got one ready to roll, Ben?
I've got it. I've got the Board Game Geek page up.
So I understand the rules for the game,
Ben. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. First question. Question that we always ask, is it a competitive or a cooperative game? And Steve?
This is a tough one. Based on this is tough.
I'm going to think competitive, though. That's my guess that it's a competitive one.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure it's competitive.
Kelly Jean is checking in. She says, just finished dinner, so she's got some guesses. Throw some guesses out there, Kelly. All right.
Absolutely.
So we don't know a lot right now. All we know, Kelly, is that it's a competitive game. That's all we know. Okay. So, Steve, you're up.
Is it a game that has come out in the last 5 years, let's say?
It has not come out within the last 5 years.
Okay, so a little older.
Verla, okay. You got one?
I might have gone too short for that. I was thinking about 10, but I said 5. All right.
Does it have dice? Is it a dice-based game?
Oh, I like that one. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It does have dice. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't... dice-based makes me think like it's... Sorry, maybe I'm revealing too much.
No,
I
you
did can tell kind of ask some questions, but
yeah, yes, I don't know if it's a dice-based game, but it has dice.
Tell me what's know if it has cards. Does it have cards?
It does have cards.
Okay.
Does it have cards? Does it have a board?
It does have a board.
All right. So to recap, we got competitive game with both a board, card, and dice. It's got them all.
Yeah.
More than 5 years old. Back to you, Steve. You got something?
Okay. Would you say that this is more of a Euro game or a thematic game? Like it's trying to be dry and Euro or some particular theme trying to really stand out?
There's a theme. I'd say it's more thematic.
Emily more wants thematic. To know, is it nature themed? And that's a good guess based on the river, right?
That's a good question. It is not nature themed, which maybe it should have been, but
I would have bet money that it had a nature theme to it. So no, Emily, it is not nature themed, but it has board, cards, dice, and a theme. It does have a theme. Verla?
Okay.
Is there a fantasy theme?
There is a fantasy theme.
Oh, Verla. She was paying attention to the Dean Camp thing, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was going to get it.
Yeah. Well, that's usually the answer.
Does it play more than two players, or is it strictly a two-player game?
Plays more than two players.
Plays two or more. Two or more board, card, and dice. It's fantasy themed, and it's more than 5 years old. Kelly says role.
Oh, wow.
Yep, it is a role-playing game.
No!
Wait.
Oh, role-playing?
Is it role-player game, or it's a role-player game?
Oh, my goodness. No, it is. Sorry, it's not role-player the game.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
My bad. I thought the question was, do you play as a role?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So
okay.
Is it an RPG?
I wouldn't say it's an RPG, no.
Okay, so it's a board game.
It's a board game. But you're given a role in the board game.
You're given a role in the board game. Okay.
Fantasy based.
And I've got a hint if you just want a general hint, but I guess.
Oh, I love a hint. Yeah, give us a hint.
What you got? You mentioned it already. It came up during this podcast.
Oh dear.
Oh, wow. Oh man. I guess we should have been paying attention to our questions.
Which had me really stressed because I was like, man, maybe I should change it. It's not Munchkin.
It's not Munchkin, Emily.
Oh gee.
Although I like that one. That's a good good
Did you say BJ said it or we said it?
I don't remember who specifically said it. I remember I heard it and I went, oh shoot, should I change my choice?
The problem is that I forget what I say as I'm saying.
I know.
Yeah, well, you dropped so much knowledge that I just, you know, there's too much to go. Like all the designers and games you guys know, like, man.
Okay, oh, now I can't even think of a question because I'm playing back in my head.
Is what it an award?
Like the show.
Is it an award-winning game?
It is an award-winning game.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's really stumping me now, and I can't believe we already said it before. Okay, so to recap, this is going to buy us some time here. It's an award-winning game, more than 5 years old. It's got a fantasy theme. It's got board. It's got cards. It's got dice. We mentioned it sometime during the show, which is absolutely
We talked about Discworld and Anti-Narking. Do those have cards? Yes, I haven't played either of them.
Not dice.
Does it have miniatures?
No dice.
It has miniatures. Oh, maybe it doesn't have dice.
Okay.
I might have gotten.
Is it Discworld, Mork?
It is Discworld.
What, Steve?
Which does have a dice.
There's a die for rolling for the fire, isn't there? I think.
I'm trying to remember.
It looks like it has a 12-sided dice that has 7A instead of an 8, which is just perfect.
Right. Absolutely right.
Is there a dice in Anti-Narking and Discworld?
I think it's to activate a particular area of the board because I think there are like 12 provinces on the
there
board.
There are.
If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, you've got all the provinces on the board.
So that's to like maybe decide where the dragon attacks or where the fire happens.
Mm.
So Discworld, I totally forgot that there was a die in there.
We had him sweating because we're throwing out Martin Wallace and he's like, oh, wow, they're going to get it right away. And then we're so dumb we didn't get it right away.
Yeah, well, you guys, I mean, you're not the first ones to have said, hey, this is kind of like Discworld Ankh-Morpork.
Really?
And I didn't realize there was a game, Discworld Ankh-Morpork, and I am a huge Terry Pratchett fan. I love Terry Pratchett. And so the moment I found out this game exists, I was like, I have to play this game.
Oh, good thing it's easy to find. You can find it in any Target. That was a little bit. It's impossible to find, unfortunately. You know who has a copy, though? Steve, I think, has a copy, right?
And Kelly.
Dad guy. Oh,
Kelly. Yeah. Thanks,
Steve. Come north to New York or fly out to the
You know
the
what
Pacific
you can
Northwest?
Find, though? You can find Anti-Narking. And I've never played Discworld, but it's basically the same game, just with a different theme, right?
But if you like the Terry Pratchett, the cards with the characters that you love have
Kelly
to be
says
there.
For cheap too. You can find it for cheap.
Yeah, I'll go scribble over.
No, it's like gold at Discworld because I think they've lost the license, right? And they're just not.
Oh yeah. I'm interested now because now the estate has changed things because there's now going to be new role playing games coming out in the Discworld universe. Oh, so I'm curious as to whether.
Right?
And a board game too, yes. Yeah. But the Discworld role-playing game was based on GURPS, which not a lot of people know or care about or like in the first place. that might change if Rihanna is going to start to maybe loosen up the strings to let that come out. That might be possible for Mr. Wallace to come back with.
Steve,
Discworld
I don't know
again.
The answer to this one. Does it fold in half, or does it have like the six?
I think
eight
the
fold
Discworld
thing?
One has a six. Sixfold.
Yeah,
it takes up a good chunk of space.
Like
take it
a ride style. Yeah, I remember it being a table hog. I do. Remember
it takes up a lot of space. Yeah. I think the die totally threw me on that because it is a game of cards. And all of the cards that you hold in your hand are the characters. So I don't even pay attention to them. I'm reading the characters. Oh, yeah, there's the librarian. Oh, there's
an old RPG, or he's sneaky, and he's got that little thing going where he knew what that die was, but we didn't. I honestly didn't remember that there was a die in Nancy Narking at all. I just didn't.
Well, when I've never played it, so I, you know, it wouldn't occur to me that the die is not important. I was checking the picture and I saw the die.
Well, you did great. That was a fantastic game. And you made Steve very happy because we got to mention Terry Pratchett.
And you also made me very ashamed that Verla beat me to it.
The only reason I knew was that he gave the hint. And I was like, what did we talk about?
Yeah.
Verla, I would have never gotten it otherwise.
Verla gets
As usual, win. Verla beats us to it.
The Gumbo Overlord, she gets one. Even if it were a tie, she would have won anyway, Ben. Absolutely. I always lose. So I lose to us.
What can I say?
I'm the tiebreaker, but the wrong way. It's the lost tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Well, that's the OnV game presented by our friends at Game Toppers LLC. Remember, folks, make your game nights a showstopper when you play on a Game Topper. Fantastic job. You stumped us all pretty good there, Ben. That was a really good one with a great game. All right, board gamers, that's it for another episode of Gumbo Live. I want to thank Ben Hammer for coming in and telling us all about his game. Give the chat crew one more just quick blurb about where they can find any, you know, information about the game, or if they have some questions to chat, how do they reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can find more information about it at wealltakefromtheriver.com. And if you send me an email at hello@wealltakefromtheriver.com, I answer every email I get. So any questions you have, any comments you have, I'd love to hear them.
No one took hello@wealltakefromtheriver.com before you grabbed it?
Well, I own wealltakefromtheriver.com. So
yeah,
I'm doing a bit. All right.
Okay. Sorry.
Make sure to like our Facebook page, facebook.com/boardgamegumbo, and our YouTube channel. It helps us to get the word out about all of our upcoming shows. Next week, we take a break, Ben. We're going to be back on Twitch. It's our Twitch Tuesdays where we play your games live on Twitch. I'll say your, I don't mean Ben's game because I don't have a copy of it.
I wish. But
we play your games chat crew live on Twitch. Next week, it's going to be a surprise, so I got to check in with Jeremy and see what we're playing. So, okay. But he's got a bunch of new games in, Steve, one you might be interested in. So we'll see if we can get one of those played. I also want to get Unmatched played, another, because I still haven't played the Alien faction yet. We haven't taken down the Martian Invader, so I want to try to get that played. All right, catch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/boardgamegumbo every other Tuesday night. I am Board Game from, I'm BJ from Board Game Gumbo. And until next time, he's got me all shook up about this game because I still have Fort Circle. To be honest, I was thinking Fort Circle games. I was going through all the list of Fort Circle games that we had mentioned.
Yeah.
All right. I'm BJ from Board Game Gumbo. And until next time, that's it.
Good night, friends.
Bye, all.
Good night. Thanks for having me.